You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Many women are currently arriving at retirement with less savings than men, and inequity issues like these require new forward-thinking solutions. Care credits are just one of the many ideas that the Commission for Financial Capability is exploring in its three-yearly review of retirement income policies to help improve the well-being of people on their road to retirement. To find out more about care credits and the review in general, I spoke to Interim Retirement Commissioner Peter Courts and began by asking, what exactly is the review of retirement income policies?
So the Commission for Financial Capability is the Office of the Retirement Commissioner that rolls statutory obligations to deliver every 3 years a review of retirement income policies. The scope of our work, I guess, is about everything that happens on the way to retirement as well. So the review itself happens every 3 years. One of the things that we do to address the terms of reference that we get in the year prior to the review is commission research that offers us some insights around the specific parts of the terms of reference. And this latest terms of reference, there's all the usual stuff around fiscal sustainability of the current superannuation model, but we've also been asked to have a look at issues around financial vulnerability and equity.
Yes, so one of these suggestions up for discussion in the review is a care credit. Can you tell the listeners what exactly a care credit is?
In terms of financial vulnerability at retirement, women are one of those groups that are known to be vulnerable. We know that women arrive at retirement on average 18% financially worse off than men, and there's a whole lot of things that contribute to that. The gender pay gap of 9.2%, but one of the key issues for women is the amount of time that they take out of the workforce to care for others, and particularly, you know, raising children. So the care credit that's been proposed by Jennifer Curtin and Yanshu Huang of University of Auckland's Public Policy Institute was in a piece that they prepared around the vulnerability of women at retirement. And one of the things that they're looking at is international examples of countries that pay a credit to women for the time that they're out of the workforce and raising children. Estonia, for example, pays employer contributions towards childcare, during childcare periods of up to 3 years per child. Norway credits individuals for periods of care work to the tune of about 71% of the average full-time wage. And Finland tops up pensions with contributions of up to 3 years per child. And what this research is suggesting we could consider is paying a care credit into women's KiwiSavers accounts while they take time out of paid work to look after family.
Has this care credit system been effective in other countries, and do you think that a system like this would actually work in New Zealand?
Well, I guess those are the things that we're tasked with doing. While we commission all this research around this and other terms of reference, one of the things that we'll have a look at next in the report, the three-yearly report is due in December, so we've still got time, I guess, to consider all of this research in a New Zealand context and to see how well not only it's working overseas, but how it might apply in a New Zealand context. You know, we know, for example, here that while it's predominantly women who I guess, bear the burden of caring for family and taking time out of the workplace, we know that in Māori and Pacific communities, those expectations, obligations, I guess, for women extends to broader whānau and community commitments. So, you know, it's all of that stuff that we'll be taking some care to have a look at how it might be relevant for a New Zealand context as well.
Do you see this being an across-the-board care credit to all women in New Zealand, or, once again, more specific groups of women being targeted, such as multi-Pacifica groups?
Well, look, one of the benefits of the current New Zealand super system, the pension model here, is its simplicity, its universality. I guess we don't want to make it unnecessarily complex, but addressing, I guess, vulnerability and inequity does require a little bit of work around the margins, I guess, of that that core benefit that all get access to at 65. Well, I think the other thing outside of Māori and Pacific, you know, we know that it's not only women days are taking time out to care for family. So if it's a care credit for primary caregivers, we'd need to understand, I guess, how that might be applied in a broader context here. If we're addressing inequity for women, we don't want to create inequity for others. But yeah, so all of those things will be considered as part of landing this report in December.
Do you think that's possible to actually figure out each individual who is the primary caregiver and is currently worse off? Do you think we can actually achieve that?
Well, look, I think there is a very complex weave of things that you know that need to be considered in that space, and I guess creating anything that's too radical or too complex means it's probably doomed to end up in a draw. So, you know, we're wanting to make sure that we identify things that are not only workable here, but there's an appetite to implement. And that's not to say that this couldn't work here, but we'd want to make some to make sure that it's workable, as I say. So, look, I there's a whole lot of levels of vulnerability. Much of that vulnerability is not necessarily addressed by retirement income policy. There are retirement risk for manual workers, quite different to white collar workers. Those groups that have lower life expectancy. I'm Māori Samoan myself. I don't consider being Māori Samoan a disability or a condition, but you know, being poor clearly is. Being a manual worker is something that can, I guess, shorten your life expectancy and also interrupt your preparation for retirement. So the policy settings that I guess address things like health expectancy, skills and employment don't necessarily sit in this space. So the challenge for us is to, I guess, provide broad enough insight that all policy areas can be considered, but we only have, I guess, influence around a specific band of that.
Right, so you're kind of suggesting that a care credit paid not just into women's KiwiSaver accounts or, you know, a care credit of some form, but people who are disadvantaged coming into retirement in general?
No, that's not what this piece is about. I guess what I'm saying is that vulnerability at retirement is much broader than just this. This research and this piece of work was specifically how we address the inequity for women arriving at retirement.
And so it's just one piece in a puzzle, kind of.
Yeah, we're also doing some work around KiwiSaver, the KiwiSaver settings at the moment, and for all the benefits that many New Zealanders are enjoying from KiwiSaver, if we look at inequity, given that it's an employer-based scheme, it's not addressing inequity for those who are out of the paid workforce for long periods. It's also, there's another piece of this review that's about the changing nature of work. Increasingly, self-employed, contractors, you know, the gig economy, those that don't benefit from employer contributions towards their KiwiSaver is another one of those areas that we're being asked to look at. So it's a broad and complex weave of things. We've got to be able to package that into some semblance of order and something that could work here.
Yeah. And just, sorry, going back to the kind of core of this conversation around the care credit for women, do you think something like that would be well received by the New Zealand public?
Oh, I think, clearly, many of those women who have been affected by it, it'll be too late in many cases for them. But, you know, I guess addressing inequity has to start somewhere. I think for your listeners, while retirement seems like a long way off to young people, and I'm the father of four grown children, but and they're not necessarily thinking about retirement right now, but for some, and particularly young women, as they're looking at that lifelong track towards retirement, some of those impacts are felt much earlier than at retirement. And I think that's why we need to be able to, I guess, address vulnerability much earlier than at retirement.
Mm. And just finally, what other recommendations are you exploring in the review? I think you might have mentioned a couple before, but maybe just some key ones to wrap things up.
Fiscal sustainability is a perennial one. You know, superannuation is currently tracking at $39 million a day. It is the biggest benefit in town. And with an aging population, that figure doubles in 10 years, trebles in 20 years. The other thing that happens across that period is shift in dependency ratios. The aging population means the number of taxpayers to superannuitants reduces. So for young people as well, I guess the fact that there will be fewer of you funding more superannuitants is one of the things that we have to have a look at and how fiscally sustainable that is as well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.